what are you doing today? Are you looking at some new frameworks to test out?
Look, when you're a developer nowadays, the first thing you do when you wake up, so just imagine this, you're laying in bed, your alarm clock goes off, or you naturally wake up, so I guess. You pick up your phone from your, like, how do you call that? The counter desk, what's it called?
Nightstand.
That's the word. You pick it up from your nightstand, you know, you open your phone, go into your browser. Let's see if there's a new framework. That's my morning ritual. Yeah. And I think that's the ritual for every front-end developer right now.
It's kind of like, you know, world news.
Yeah.
I don't follow the world news. I don't know what's happening in my country.
I follow front-end frameworks. Yeah.
I'm subscribed to Fireship on YouTube.
Are you though?
I am. Oh. I am subscribed to Fireship. And all I receive is, like, I open either Instagram or YouTube.
Uh-huh.
And on YouTube, I'll get like a really quick, witty short about a new framework almost every other day.
That's fun, right?
Like Fireship makes a lot of fun videos, I think. If you don't know the career, like the field of web dev, and you don't have your own solid opinion, then I think Fireship can be really dangerous because he brings things in a very enthusiastic way.
And then you start trying it and you're like, oh no.
Yeah.
What is this?
I almost feel like he gets money for it.
He gets something out of it.
Yes. Yeah. He's like sponsored by a company.
Yeah.
I feel like he might have been sponsored by companies before.
I feel like almost all web dev influencers, between quotes, are sponsored by something because they oversell a lot of times.
They do.
I mean, that's also their work, right? Like overhyping, overselling things because, you know.
I think being positive is a big part of becoming popular.
Yeah, but like there's a difference between being positive but like realistic and, you know, honest about things and being like over enthusiastic about something and not,
I don't know,
really, you know.
Again, for someone who's been in the field, that's very true. I would enjoy someone's opinion way more.
Yeah.
I would respect their opinion way more if they were also critical about certain aspects. But for new developers, young developers, when they hear someone constantly like, oh yeah, this is so cool, and you can build this with it and that with it. Mm-hmm. And then the next day, oh yeah, this is so cool, you can build this. Like the same fucking story.
Yes.
Every day, but with a different framework. As a young developer, you're like, oh my God, it's so cool. Web dev is positive and fun.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say. Like, it reminds me of me being like a young little front-end dev boy.
Yeah.
In the big front-end world that was not that big then. But yeah, it's kind of like that. Like, you're very enthusiastic. Like, you build everything with everything. Yep. Like, it doesn't matter what.
You're just experimenting.
And it's a lot of fun. Yeah.
You've not been working at a company, at an agency with Next.js for the last 5 years, trying to like understand why a page isn't correctly loading.
Trying to build games in React.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
All that fun.
Yep. But so again, frameworks, new frameworks, they pop out of the ground like mushrooms in fall, in autumn. Like every day, there's like a... There's a new one.
I don't know. I think that sounds a bit too like nice and cute. Like,
I mean, mushrooms are mold, bro.
Yeah, they are. But
they'll take over the world, and everybody will be like, "What are those called again? The clickers?"
Oh yeah, but I think I think it's better to compare it to, like, I don't know,
a disease.
Rats.
Oh,
you know, they spread disease.
An infestation.
And they just keep going. Like, there's more and more and more, and it just doesn't end.
Like, it will never end.
You can place a few traps down, and then you're like, ah, finally, you know, they're gone. Well, guess what? They're not. They're still there. Yep.
You open, you crack open a wall,
and like a few hundred
just fall out.
Yeah. Yes, that's. I think that's a better
analogy
for front end development right now.
But why are we so unhappy right now?
Because we're old. No, I mean. I don't know. I think like it also happens because you are more experienced. You know, you have higher expectations and quality control, I think, in the work you do.
Yeah.
Like you know better than a new fresh front-end developer what might go wrong in the future with a big project, for example.
Yeah, you've like, had the pitfalls.
Yeah, you're not like naive. You're not like, oh yeah, HTMX is going to solve all my problems.
HTMX, you say?
Yes.
What is HTMX?
I mean, what is HTMX? It's trying to do a lot of things that it's not doing well, I think.
The definition on the website, what does it say? Should I read it out?
I can read it out, I guess.
Yeah, do it.
HTMX gives you access to AJAX, CSS transition, WebSockets, and server send events directly in HTML using attributes.
Yeah, another definition here is HTMX is a library that allows you to access modern browser features directly from HTML rather than using JavaScript.
Yes. So the first question is why?
I think that's the last question as well. Is that just ask why and but, you will falter. You will land on your face trying to explain why.
Yeah, but like when I hear this, my first question is why?
Yeah. That is true. Like the question for me is, I have used frameworks, right? I've used React. I've even used Web Components.
Yeah.
You remember those?
They're still here.
They're still here, but nobody cares about them. Only well, I do.
It's also kind of, I don't know.
It's at least native.
It is native, yes. And but I think it's a bit complex for me at least.
It's hard to make it fully work.
Yeah.
100% agree. And there's So the navigation is really hard. So routing is hard.
That's why people are not using it, because it's too complex.
No, but listen.
They want like React, where it's like you just can do whatever the fuck you want in a terrible, disgusting way, but it's easy.
Is React easy?
Yeah, it is.
Not to a lot of developers, I swear. I guess. React is very complex. I mean, that's the answer to why.
I think like jQuery was the easiest if we have to.
But it's not
like
a framework.
Yeah, but
you can't do the same reactiveness.
No, that's true.
Like, but I mean, the front-end framework nowadays requires you to be reactive.
But more like that's why jQuery was so popular, because it was very easy.
Yeah, but it didn't do what React did.
No. Okay, sure.
If you wanted to do what React did, you had to grab something more complex.
Yeah.
But now people are so fed up with the complexities of some frameworks, they're now grabbing back to technologies or techniques from back in the early 2000s.
But to be honest, I think it's mainly backend developers or like people who don't have a lot of experience with JavaScript. They kind of want to, you know.
I don't agree. I really don't.
If I look at what is being built, like a lot of people use HTMX with like Go, for example, and Django.
Yeah.
There's not a front-end developer is going to do that. Like a front-end developer is not going to develop a Go thing and then add some HTMX to it.
No, but like what other language would you be able to use with HTMX? That's a limitation of HTMX. You have to use a backend language.
Well, HTMX, I mean, sure, yeah. But HTMX says that you can add it to anything you like. Like, it works with everything.
Okay, so my point is, for example, if you want a modern front-end framework, it usually has a back-end, synergistic server. For example, if you use React, you're not using React nowadays. Yeah. You're using Next. Because Next has a back-end server. Same with Vue. You're not using Vue just out of the browser. You're using, what's it called again? There's like a
Nuxt.
Nuxt. You're using Nuxt because Nuxt has a backend server. You can do backend requests. You can do logic on the backend. Same with all the other modern front end frameworks. So what I'm trying to say is, now, if you're using HTMX, you don't have that. And if you use one of those modern web frameworks, then you don't need HTMX anymore.
Yeah.
So you have to grab something that is a backend framework that works on its own independently. Okay. And Go and all the other languages that they use for HTMX, they don't have a good coupling, a good templating system for HTML. And that, I think, is why people grab it. For example, if you take PHP, PHP, you can write HTML tags in PHP code.
Yeah.
Like, not directly, actually, but you can have it in one file.
Sure.
And the HTML tags don't have to be strings. They don't have to be text. They can be actual HTML tags. You just have to end or close the PHP tag write some HTML and then open up the PHP tag again.
Yeah.
So you can actually template and separate the, not really separate them, but as far as your coding goes, mm-hmm. it's your HTML isn't written as a variable or yeah. as a string in your code.
Mm-hmm.
But in Go, in Python, and in all the other languages that HTML is being used with, you can't do that. And I feel like people take that as a good thing.
Yeah.
Because they're like, okay, I'm not going to use something that already has this. I'm going to use something that doesn't have this to make it work with it.
Hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's like, otherwise why would you use a language that already does it?
Yeah. Well, because that would make sense, right?
Yeah.
It's just, you're making your own life harder than it should be or has to be.
In one way, yes. And another way, no, right? Like, because if you're using HTMX, then you're already choosing to not go a specific route.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to agree or accept that PHP can do this for like 90% of the way.
Yeah.
PHP isn't reactive, don't get me wrong, but you don't have to be reactive in a lot of these states.
No.
Like, for example, loading a new page mm-hmm. or submitting a form and going to the next step, Amazon isn't doing that reactively. You refresh the page.
Yeah.
Why? Because it's way more stable and you have the logic in the back end anyway. And then you do the templating in the back end.
Yeah.
What do you need reactiveness for anymore? If you use HTMX for like super reactive pages, then you're missing the point of HTMX. And if you're using all your logic in the back end, then you're not making use of HTMX anymore. So it's like, I'm in between. Like, what is HTMX used for?
But I have the same question with like most websites though. Like, why are you even making websites like completely dynamic, like, or like reactive? What's the point in that?
Fair.
Right? We're adding JavaScript to anything that's like, that can have JavaScript, but why? There's no point in it.
Yeah.
Like, JavaScript should be reserved for things that need to be reactive. But like, when you build a marketing website, tell me, what has to be reactive about that? Like, maybe the form you want to be, you know, reactive in a way.
Just use jQuery. Well,
exactly. Or just JavaScript.
Yep.
Like,
there's enough native form validation.
Form validation techniques. And like the submitting maybe. I don't know. But all that stuff is like, you're not going to use a whole React library just for that. That makes no sense.
But yeah.
For some reason, we do that though. Like, we build everything in React
mm-hmm.
because we can, I guess.
It's a bit of a combination for me. The one of the biggest reasons I grab Next is free hosting for simple websites.
In Vercel, I guess.
In Vercel.
Yeah.
And I think it's good to build my experience with it because I think a lot of projects require this
for some reason. Yeah, but exactly, for some reason. That's the whole thing. Like, it's so strange because like React was made specifically for the reactivity part, right? So
it's in the name.
It's in the name. It was made for Facebook, which makes sense, right? Or more sense at least. Like, you can build Facebook without reactivity. That would also work fine.
It started without reactivity.
Exactly.
And it worked fine. It's just, if you want things to
be a bit snappier or like faster or like, I don't know.
You want the comment count below a post to update every few seconds.
Well, like in a split second, I guess.
Well, no, it's not that.
No, but I mean like when you, I guess.
Like, I think they don't, so to make that work, you need different technologies. For example, WebSockets. Yeah. I'm pretty sure Facebook doesn't use WebSockets for all the events.
No.
It uses that only for chat messages and if you're directly in maybe a specific post.
Yeah.
But on an overview, like if you're on your dashboard and you're looking at like 10 different posts, mm-hmm. It's not going to update all those events with WebSockets. I'm pretty sure it's not WebSockets.
Yeah, I also assume not. But let me go back to my point, I guess.
Yeah.
So React was invented for the reactivity part to mm-hmm. make things more, you know, responsive, reactive, to do things that, you know, PHP, for example, can do, but not in the, you know, the same way as React does. So we're going like a few years further, and then everyone decided that every web application is built in React. or Vue or Angular at that time, or Ember, or all those frameworks. What is it called? Knockout is one. I don't know. There's more of those frameworks. But we made apps, again, apps in JavaScript, which makes sense, right? Because for apps, you want that, you know, reactivity part.
Yeah, in a lot of situations, it's not just about loading the page. It's also animations. Yeah. And
It's not just content, yeah. But you want to like be to edit things and make it like instantly, you know, sent or like instantly visible. And you want to do like quick things that make a website feel like it's an app, not a website. That's what it does best, I think, React. And then someone somewhere decided that, yeah, but, you know, we're starting to build marketing websites or content websites in React, but there's no caching. There's no, like, not real caching. There's no, like, how do you call that? There's no indexing, for example.
Yep.
Like, all those things that that can be done with anything else than React, like anything else than React. And someone decided that we should mesh or adjust React to do that.
Yeah.
And that's where you lose me. Like, there's no point in it. You can add React or Vue or any of those frameworks like to a small part of a website, right? That also works fine. You don't have to build a whole website in that framework. You can use the framework for just one small part. Like in the earlier days, I've seen a lot of websites where it was just like PHP or .NET,
yeah.
For example. And then like there's one small part, like a search, you know, a search area where you have like cards that had to be loaded and refreshed and filtered, for example.
Yep.
And just for that one small part, they use Vue.
Yep.
That's fine, because that's exactly what it's meant to do, right?
Yep.
But now we're building everything in the reactive part, and then we're going to convert it to a static generated part.
Yep.
But there are some small parts that we don't want static, because they have to be dynamic again.
Yeah. I have another reason, though, I think, why a lot of people are grabbing Next or React or any kind of framework, and that is components.
Yes.
I think a lot of, especially agencies and companies that want to have a, I don't know, like they have a style and they want to keep that synchronized with all their projects.
Yeah.
They grab a framework because you can create a component, like, for example, a button. You can make it a separate component and reuse that button, the same logic, the same kind of logic on buttons. What is that even?
Yeah.
But yeah, you can use the exact same styling, the same logic, and you can make it testable as well per component.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a big reason why people are using frameworks. And I'm not disagreeing with you, but I think we overlook the fact that a lot of companies want the expandability and testability of components. And that's why they, even for simple websites, they grab something like React or Vue.
I think that, first of all, I think that what happens, it's like a snowball effect that happened.
Yeah.
Like we were using more and more JavaScript frameworks for websites. People liked the fact that React was doing CSS, HTML and JavaScript in one single file. So it was all like component based. And they were kind of fed up with writing CSS and making that like make sense, right? Like SCSS in separate files and all that stuff.
Yeah. Separation of concerns.
Yeah. A lot of like developers and companies were kind of annoyed by the fact that they had to manage like a styling library, let's just say. Let's call it that. And I think React kind of solved those issues, like making everything, you know, in small components, reusable.
Sure.
No overlapping styling by default, like if you were just doing inline styling.
Yeah.
So that solved a lot of issues. And I think that a lot of people and developers were like, hey, this solves everything, right? Yeah. So let's just keep using this for everything. And then they eventually found out that, oh yeah, but it works great for this, but it doesn't do, you know, caching, for example, very well. Or, you know, one of the very important things with marketing websites is that it has to be, you know, searchable. It has to be, you know, indexable by Google, for example. And it didn't do that well. So I think that's why Next was created, and we've just kept going that direction. Like, yep. After we found out that it didn't work very well, React, we still kept going because we got like little nibbles, like a little, you know.
Yeah, and a lot of the solutions were hacky, or they were still experimental, and they never got out of that state where unexpected behavior happens in your browser or on the back end.
So for example, for my website, my old website, I used Vue, I think. And then, of course, I also had the same problem with indexing. Yep. It didn't work. I mean, it's supposed to work, but it didn't work well with Google.
Okay.
So I found a website, I think it was called prerender.io or something.
Okay.
So what they do is literally they pull all the pages from your website.
Yeah, they and navigate to them, right?
No, they make it static.
Okay.
And then, so if you go to your website, it does a request to the prerender.io.
Oh.
And then it serves a static version, like when it indexes, I mean, sorry. Okay, when Google indexes it, it goes to the prerendered static version and then gives that to Google. But you as a user will get the React version.
The Vue version.
The Vue version, yeah.
In that case, that's...
But
why doesn't... Did you use Nuxt?
No.
Yeah, but that's the thing.
That didn't exist yet. So this is what I mean, like the early days of like React and Vue, where it just didn't work well with Google.
No, I've been there too with React, for example, where you want, like, the SPA concept of React is really fun, and you're like, oh my god, you can, like, the page transitions and this and that, you can do fun stuff.
Yeah,
and then you're like not visible on Google anymore.
Remember what you had to do page transitions before React?
Oh, yes.
Like with Ajax.
No, but that's the thing. I think in a lot of situations, like HTMX comes from that mindset is we want to make not overly complex pages, but we also don't want to use React, like or a library or a framework that is so Can you do page transitions with HTMX? I think you possibly might be able to, but it's more like for the elements inside a page.
Mm-hmm.
For example, loading the next section, or submitting a form, or anything that's simple. But in that case, why not just use JavaScript?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I also don't know, but. So I'm currently working on a project that has a lot of page transitions.
Okay.
Or I'm going to start working on it. I haven't done it yet, but it's a lot of page transitions. So it's built in React with Next, but I need page transitions.
Okay.
But it's Next, so it's statically generated.
Yeah, but the page transitions are client-side.
Yeah, but still, you have to kind of, you know.
No, you don't have to do anything.
It's harder than you think.
No, it's not.
Yes.
No, it's not.
I've looked at it, especially with the current app router instead of the page router from Next, and it's a pain.
Really?
Yes. It doesn't work properly.
I've not tried, I think, recently. But yeah, I mean, you have to have some kind of wrapper around your body.
It just feels kind of backwards again. Like... going from dynamic to static to dynamic.
Yeah, that's true. In a sense, I think the concept of Next always made sense to me, where you separate the initial page load that's just rendered on the server side.
Yeah.
Once you're fully loaded in as a client, you swap all the reactive elements to a reactive, like, server client side part, and from then on, you actually let go of the server side part.
Yeah.
Because your client can handle all the JavaScript. Google can't. So all you got to do is make sure that every page you would visit on a full refresh would load initially as the client would.
Yeah.
But like with Next, it's a lot easier than it used to be, in my opinion. But yeah.
Yeah. It feels like, again, I've built like websites where most of it was done in .NET or a PHP, and then just one small part that had to be interactable or dynamic was made in Vue or React.
Yeah.
And for me, that made more sense. Like, I kind of get why people don't want to do that, because they want one tool to do everything because that's easier. But the problem is that all the work is kind of shifted towards the front-end developer instead of getting it split by two. And on the one hand, that's nice, I guess, because there's less, discrepancy between the both.
Yeah.
But that also creates way more work for the front-end. Like, I have to deal with caching right now. I don't want to do that. Like, that's not really my job, I think. But now it is. I don't have a choice in that.
I mean, in a perfect world, you would have two developers working on it.
Sure, yeah.
But
still, then you have two front-end developers to work on it.
Well, not necessarily. I think, the problem is, I think the framework is accessible to front-end developers. And you're working in the code of a front-end developer.
Yeah.
Because you're working in the page, you know, like page.tsx.
Yeah.
You have some functions there to do the caching and the preloading for certain things.
Yeah.
I mean, technically, you don't have to be a front-ender to work on those. But yeah, it's because it's in a framework that is front-end oriented.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean it only has to be done by a front-ender.
No, that's true. But I mean, I
think companies are getting away with just hiring one guy.
No, seriously, that's what's happening. What's happening? Yeah. Like, so many companies, I don't think even have backend developers anymore because they don't need it.
Yep.
Because they just use a headless CMS that's hosted somewhere else, like one of those cloud CMSs.
No.
And they 100%. Just plug it into React and that's it. Like, what else do you need?
I mean, that sounds kind of nice as a company.
As a company, yeah, sure. I mean, it's one less person to pay, I guess.
Yep.
But, and also you lose all the infrastructure you have to deal with and all that other stuff. I mean, the hosting for the website itself still has to be done, I guess. But
yeah,
with services like Vercel, that's also made a lot easier than it used to be, no containers and all that bullshit.
Yep.
But again, I don't know. It feels kind of weird that everything is kind of shoved into a front-end developer's work.
Yeah, I understand the frustration. And I think there are some aspects that are really unnecessary for a front-ender to deal with, especially with indexing or caching or any of those things. I think it's good to know what you're doing, but it doesn't mean that you have to do all of it yourself. But yeah.
It's also so much the modeling of the the data, for example, that's all stuff you have to do now.
Yeah, as a front-ender, you don't have a back-ender or a content manager or something, someone like that who would deal with that. You're setting up the headless CMS, you're setting up all the content and the structure, and then you're doing the requests and the API setup, and then...
And also validation and stuff like that.
Yep.
That has, I mean, at first we did it in the front end and in the back end, right? Yep. So the front end is not that reliable always. There are ways to kind of, circumvent.
Yeah, always. If it's very sensitive, you got to check the back end as well.
Yeah.
Check it on the back end.
But now we have to do it in the front end.
Hmm. Yep.
And there's so, you have to add so much logic to the front end.
What do you mean? But no, you also have to have it in the back end.
Yeah.
For example, with Next, you have the app folder, right?
Yeah.
But it used to also have a separate folder. What's it called again?
I don't know.
The separate folder for the backend.
Oh. Hmm.
I forgot the name. I think nowadays you can do it all in the app folder.
Hmm.
But you would have, was it API or something? I think it was /API. That's what we have.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I do is I make a separate, I still keep it in the same code base, but I have it in a separate folder to do the backend things.
Yeah.
For example, our podcast website, we have an endpoint called /API/episodes.
Yeah.
And I do the pulling of the, what was it again? The XML file of the RSS feed.
Uh-huh.
I pull that there. And I read it all out, and I convert it to JSON.
Yeah.
And that's our endpoint for the client. So then I can cache that separately, and then the client can pull that every now and then. So I don't do that in the same file as the front end.
Yeah.
It's in the same code base, but it's not the front end.
Yeah.
So if you're doing a submission, a form submission, you can do some of the validation on the front end as far as like if you want to tell the client something directly.
Yeah.
But once you submit it, you should probably send it to, if you don't have a separate backend like PHP or Go, you should probably make a file in the API folder, grab the data there, do some validation there, and have the like more secure connection to the database. For example, if you want to check if an email is already signed up, right? You don't want to do that on a client side.
No, no.
Because if that's an endpoint, that's a very dangerous one.
Yeah.
Because people could just submit random emails and check who's signed up.
Now that's fun.
That's another concern though.
Yeah.
Anyway, so like it's still, you can separate it. You don't like, it's a bit of both and you have to make use of the tools the correct way, which is dangerous and like you don't know exactly where you have to look sometimes.
Yeah.
I have that too. Like when I first started with Next, what the hell are all these like backend functions you can now use?
Yeah.
When you're coming from React, all you want to do is just do an AJAX request or a fetch request.
Yeah.
You know, on the client side. But now you have to do the preloading and the, what's it called? There's a function to get all the data before the page load is.
Loads. Yeah. I don't think you have to use that anymore, but
you have a different one.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but I don't know what's called.
You still have to separate it. Well, you don't have to. You can use the main function of the component now.
Yeah, exactly.
But like when it first came out Next, you did have a separate one.
Yeah, it was. No, I know what you mean, but oh wait, it's maybe the old way to.
Yeah, it's the old version.
Yeah.
Nowadays, you can just, in the main function of the component, you can just do a fetch and Next will know that that's done on the back end. But you used to have to make a separate function or make use of a separate function to tell Next that that code has to be done before the page loads on the backend and then send the data. That was also weird. You had to like populate the function with the data to keep it in the context of the data of the function. But you couldn't get to the data on the backend yet. It was really awkward. I remember it was like really awkward to debug.
Yeah.
Because the front end sometimes would just have an empty variable or empty properties. And I would be like, why? On the back end it works. But once it's sent to the front end, it's empty.
Why?
Why? It was hard to debug.
Yeah.
It's because it's in separate context. And sometimes the front end, if you don't have the right attributes at the function of the front end.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, you're populating a list of blog posts. So you have like blog posts as the page or as a component for the blog posts.
Yeah.
So you want to fill that component, but then the first thing you have to do is make sure that the page you load calls the function on the back end, which is separate from the blog post component. Because the blog post component, back then you couldn't pull in data on a component level.
Yeah, exactly.
All you could do is pull it on the page level and then drizzle it down to the components.
Yeah, so now you do it in the component itself.
Can you?
Yeah, you can.
You can, but do you want to?
I don't know.
That's a question. But you used to have to like always have the right amount of attributes and stuff. Like, you know, if you're adding like, for example, a reference to X, Y, and Z in the component when you're adding it, you have to keep that always synchronized. Because if you miss that or one of the things, because sometimes you have like a dependency tree of all these data. Like if you want to drizzle it down to like four different components deep and you're using TypeScript.
Oh boy.
You have to define all those things and you have to make a type and an interface in some situations to keep track of the data structure. It's like, it's a lot of work to just get a component filled.
Yeah.
And in a lot of situations, you do want to do it on a page level, not on a component level.
Yeah, sure. Especially when you have multiple components on that page that interact with that data.
Exactly. So you do still have to drizzle it down.
Yeah.
Or you have to use context, which is...
Sounds disgusting, by the way, drizzle down, but...
Okay.
So, AC Max, am I right?
Yeah, are we, do we have a conclusion? I kind of want to like point out, I've read a post about when it's used IRL.
Yeah.
And all the three examples were like minimal, very small, non-production situations.
Yeah, I've also seen a lot of people asking like, hey, are there any examples, you know, in a large scale production environment? Yeah. And no one can answer that because, yeah, it doesn't exist because I don't think it's made for that. But, you know, developers like to, you know, develop and get hyped about something and then just try to jam it into everything. And that's how websites are born, I guess.
I'm still not 100% certain if caching and how SEO would work with HTMX. Because, again, the initial loading has to be done server-side.
Yeah.
And then you're kind of breaking the whole point of HTMX, in my opinion.
Yeah.
If you're using a framework to only do the reactiveness, but the reactiveness is just basically removing the part where you're refreshing the page, and that's all it does. Like, it doesn't allow you to do more interactable, have like state management and stuff like that.
Yeah.
What's the point of having a front-end library that does that?
Yeah.
There's some people that actually believe that HTMX is the future. And there's a huge blog post. I'll put it in the description. And I think it's a cool and experimental, like it's a good experiment.
Sure.
And it's healthy that people are still trying things. But the biggest ick I have, and I hate that word, but the ick I have with this is we're, as you also mentioned a lot of times, we're getting into that vicious circle.
Yeah.
Like it's a cycle where
we've been here before.
Yeah.
And we're here again. Why?
HTMX is literally like what we used to do in the early 2000s or even late 2000s when you couldn't parse JSON. Like there was no JSON concept back in the day. I think it was like HTML4.
Yes.
And you couldn't like create elements and stuff really nicely. You had to use strings for elements. You couldn't like document.create element.
Yeah.
Back in the day. So you couldn't use logic to populate and template your pages.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, if you wanted something reactive, you had to use a backend language, right? So what we used to do then is you click on a button and we do a request to a PHP server and I have a function there that actually renders the HTML that the client expects. That HTML gets sent back as a response for the AJAX and literally inserted or replaces the part of the page.
Yep.
And it used to be really jank, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, nowadays, we take it for granted. Browsers are really smooth. And it's funny because I'm like 90% sure the reason why people went to the framework the whole thing is because browsers became really good at replacing parts of the DOM. When HTML first came out, it wasn't meant to be reactive.
Yeah.
It never was meant to be like that. And people wanted reactiveness. So reactiveness in this case is just changing parts of the site or the page without refreshing.
Yeah.
People really wanted that. And it was so slow. Like changing a part of the page would literally take like 200 milliseconds, 300 milliseconds. You would have like, the browser would hang while you're doing an AJAX request. And a lot of browser developers would work on that and fix that. And then it became so smooth that it was possible to do big tree changes, like DOM tree changes.
Yeah.
I think if we never went into that, like that direction from the get-go, we wouldn't even have frameworks. We would maybe still work just as HTML, CSS, and JS. Maybe. I don't know. In a different universe, you know?
Yeah. I'm wondering, like, there must be some people who still work in, you know, just very simple HTML and JavaScript and, I don't know, maybe just PHP. I don't know. Wondering how they are doing, if they're enjoying their work.
I think there's still a world where PHP and stuff still... I can see it.
Right.
I can see it, yeah. It doesn't have to be... Again, the browser is capable of many things.
Yeah.
You don't have to make use of all the features to have a website.
Yeah. What you said about the browser, like that it was more, you know, capable of doing things, and that the frameworks kind of, you know, jumped on that.
Yep.
I think it's also the other way around, right? Like the 100%. Frameworks wanted to do much more than what the browser could do, and then the browsers adjusted to that behavior.
Yep.
So it's kind of like keeping each other in check, you know, and like keeping it evolving.
And that's why I'm an advocate of native methods.
Yeah.
I would love if, I don't know, Google can do it.
Yeah.
Google can do it, but React isn't from Google. But like, imagine if...
I think the problem is like the development of like the web is kind of slow in a way. Like the frameworks are like very fast and like quick, and it's like a constant, you know, evolvement. But like the web standards are not going that fast, I think.
Yes, that's true.
And
that is a limitation of maybe a big reason why frameworks aren't accepted as natively or adapted to native technology. But I also think the philosophy behind why frameworks exist and what it should do and what browsers should do, they are so separate. That's where all our frustration comes from in the first place. Browsers weren't meant to do all this complexity in the first place, but people wanted this for whatever reason, not for development. Like a part of it is like development experience, but a big part of it, the biggest part, is user experience. Like companies want users to feel like they're on a native application, like an app.
Yeah.
And I think that's like the number one reason is money, you know, like companies want users to be engaged and like, oh my God, the animation on this page is so cool. It's not a static text.
I mean, it's like a lot of times there were like research that said, like, I don't know, a user has to, you know, get the data they want like in a certain amount of time or they lose interest, for example. Yeah.
Under 2 seconds, I think.
So
otherwise they will 100% navigate away.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all based on like how companies think or have tested and researched what works and what sells.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the big reasons is like when Facebook came out and it worked based on React, people wanted that technology for their own product, even though it wasn't necessary. It's like, oh my God, Facebook has this and it works like this and they did well. So that means that we should also use this.
Yeah.
Like a bit of that copying or aping.
Yeah. And culture. I think that also, you know, that also happened with like Angular and, you know, a lot of frameworks, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's always like, but hey, they use this, so it must be good. And then everyone is jumping on that because I think it will solve all their problems.
Bandwagoning.
Yes.
So, yeah.
I mean, I get it, but I think we should all sometimes kind of, you know, step back and, you know, think clearly about why we're doing this and if we should.
Yeah. There's people maybe smarter than us, I don't know, who have written a lot about like the positivity of HTMX. So I'm going to dive into that and see if I can, you know, at least understand their perspective, because currently I don't see the benefit and I see a lot of pitfalls.
Well, I'm curious, like maybe you'll become a HTMX guru.
I understand how it works. We've done a bit of research today.
Yeah.
We spent an hour like looking into HTMX and seeing how it's done, like how it works in an app, if you want to call it an app.
Yeah.
But it still is like, what about the initial requests? What language do you use for the backend? How do you deal with state management? Like all these questions, they are not answered.
Yeah.
And the answer will be, do whatever you want. And that's the problem with HTMX, I think. It's open, but that also means it's not useful.
Yeah.
Anyway, shall we wrap it up?
Yeah, we shall. Maybe if there are some HTMX lovers listening right now, we'd love to hear what you think about HTMX and why it's the new coming of Christ, I guess.
My God.
Yep.
That's what the X stands for, the cross of Christ?
Yes, it's the cross. Yeah, that's correct.
Ajax, he has risen.
Oh, he's back for us developers.
Yeah.
So yeah, let us know, and otherwise we might check in a while to see how you are doing with HTMX, if you've you know.
I would like to have a different opinion. just to be devil's advocate in these episodes, because
I'm complaining a lot and you are like,
I'm trying to understand.
Yeah, exactly.
Complaining comes from a point of frustration, and I'm trying to understand why we were frustrated in the first place. I think that's like the best way to alleviate the issues.
Yeah, that's a healthy way to deal with it. I'm just frustrated and I'm like, nah,
you don't have time for this.
No, fuck this. I'm not gonna jump in this.
All right, thank you guys for listening.
Thank you. See you soon.